It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of CBD. You can participate and have your specific questions answered by emailing sweethomecannabama.com. And now for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Jennifer Boozer. I'm the owner and founder of Cannabama, the CBD store here in downtown Mobile. We're located at 558 St. Francis Street, just a block up from Wenzel's, next to the Delta Bike Project. And our phone number is 251-255-5155. You can call us about anything. Just say hi. We like it.
Hi.
Probably get the voicemail if you just call for random reasons and people get out of hand. But, you know, we'll call you back. So anyway, our number again is 251-255-5155. And our website and online store is www.cannabama.com, C-A-N-N-A-B-A-M-A. You would be surprised how no one knows how to, I mean, like I say, cannabama.com. What's your email address? It's Jennifer at cannabama.com. People are like, cannabama.com? Yeah. Welcome to the show, Sergio Rangel, my
Hello,
wonderful
Rosa.
And fabulous bienvenido.
Bienvenido.
We like to tap into those Mexican roots of his just at least once a day.
Yeah, for a split second to say, hey, you're still that.
Yeah.
You can't escape it. All right, cool.
Well, I think no. I just put my foot in my mouth up to the knee.
Well, you know, when you get it out, it'll feel really comfortable after
that.
Well,
it tastes like Mexican food, though.
Oh, guess so.
Gross. All right, enough of that. I'm deliriously tired. Just got off the road from Birmingham. In case you cannot tell, I actually was zoned out and half asleep. And the guys were like, are you ready to start the show? And I was like, oh, hey, what's up? Anyway, happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween.
Sergio's in charge of sound effects tonight. Anyway, it's Halloween, you know, whatever, boo, 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 whatever. Spooky.
What?
Boo, boo, boo.
Ooh.
I don't, you know, I can take it or leave it. We don't need to get into that. But anyway, last year I was a cop. This year I'm an overworked and well-traveled single mom who is ready to go home and go to bed.
There's a specific niche market for that. So.
I'm telling you, there is.
Yeah, definitely.
It comes with a never-ending
story.
Glass of yes. Soda of some sort of caffeine, running shoes, and yoga pants.
She doesn't have a van though, y'all. So if y'all want to
no,
get her a van,
no, I traded in my van. I was too cool for the van.
Yeah, that's hey.
I
that's
traded right. in the van and the husband that gave it to me.
And then you got an SUV, and
yes, now I have an SUV, and
you
I am
dive
alone
out of it
in
all
it.
The time.
I am alone in it every night.
Well, now that we're pepped up and having
super
an exciting
single.
Time.
Anyway, so yeah, happy Halloween. But more importantly to me today, and I didn't plan it this way, obviously. But no one thinks through, hey, you know, what holidays fall on my clean anniversary? I should get clean tomorrow so it falls on Thanksgiving every year or something like that. No, mine is on Halloween. My day one is Halloween. Okay, so October 30th, 2014, was the last time that I abused opiates. And so today, I am 8 years clean.
All hail the queen.
Throwing candy corn in
yeah.
there.
It's really not that hard to be clean anymore, so thanks for the revelry, but it's pretty much just getting up and being who I am. But in the beginning, it was not easy at all.
But
it
it's
was
still
very
exciting.
Hard. It is very exciting cool. because I started my pain pill addiction in 2004. So I took pills for almost 10 years. No, I did take them for 10 years. I got clean in October of 14. This is how tired I am because I forgot that I'm doing different math than what was about to come out of my face and sound dumb. So from 2004.
Math out of your face, that's a little weird.
It's the best I can do. Math is not my friend. 2004 in the spring, more like early that year, I started experimenting here and there with taking pills because I didn't understand, you know, that it was something you could be like a drug addict with. Mm-hmm. And I hurt my neck. And it was, you know, this was 6 or 8 months after the baby had been born and died. And for those of you who don't know, my son Elijah was born and died at 5 days old and my uterus and bladder ruptured and I almost died. And I had to recover from all of that and also begin the grieving process over losing my, you know, my perfectly healthy full-size baby who was brain dead. And so I hurt my neck and I started using pain medicine from the doctor. And it was like that screaming grief inside of me that made me feel like I was going to just implode. It just went quiet. And I would do that every once in a while until it became something I did every day. And it was 3 times a day. And then, you know, by the time somebody told me I was in drug withdrawal, I was insulted because I didn't do drugs. I even told the doctor, I don't even smoke weed, which is really funny to me now. But,
well, and, you know, that's the, like, a perfect transition
cause, right,
like, that's
because
where we're at today.
That was the DARE program beaten into my brain. So anyway, I have been clean almost as long as I used, which I'm really excited about. 2 more years, maybe they'll just cancel each other out.
It never happened.
Well, I mean, you know, 2 more years, let's see, I'm 44, I'll be 46. So that means more of my adult life has been sober than...
Awesome.
That's really good, you know? And yeah. I really don't. I don't struggle with it at all.
And then when you get to 48, you'll be like, what?
Now I need to start doing something else stupid. Let me open a cannabis. Oh, wait. No, I did that already.
You know, just because you find yourself being, you know, at peace and harmony does not mean one must self-sabotage in order to feel something.
Oh, no. But no, today really is more important to me than my birthday. The day that I was born, I had nothing to do with it. You know, sperm and egg and incubation and then birth. Can't really take any credit for that. But, you know, we want to celebrate the day that our people came into the world because it's a momentous occasion, right? Well, for me personally, it was like I chose to live instead of die. And I made a decision and I stuck with it. And God delivered me from a lot of that suffering and is the whole reason I succeeded. And now I don't even think about being an addict anymore unless the topic comes up, you know, which it does a lot in my work. But like day to day, I don't think about pills. I don't struggle with it. Thank God, you know. I don't envy anyone that still struggles. You know,
but
if
you are,
a long time.
There is a place where you can go as a first resort.
That's right. That's right. And if you are in any form of addiction, you know, we would love to help you. That's what we do. Take it from somebody who's an admitted former addict who is in recovery 8 years today, you know, and I didn't have the kind of help that I'm offering you. I did not have that. I was 3 years clean the first time I tried CBD and it changed my life. I can only imagine how much more profound it would have been for me had I been in that initial detox period.
Mm-hmm.
Because let me tell you, the way that detoxing off of narcotics or alcohol makes you feel is so bad on such a deep cellular level. That is what keeps people in addiction. It is not even the shame. It's not even all of the stupid things we do, you know, whether you've done people dirty or stolen from them or cheated and lied or whatever you did, because most of us at least lie. You know, we may not rob people for drug money, but most of us have lied a few times to get what we want. When it comes to pills, I know that I did.
Whether it be to somebody else or ourselves.
Oh, well, you lie to yourself. Oh, yeah. I'm pulling this off.
Yeah, like nobody can tell.
Nobody knows how bad my situation is. Yeah. Yes, they know better than you do. It's called, that's when I was the queen of denial instead of the queen of cannabis. because I thought I was pulling it off. And it sometimes if I think about it really hard, I still get a little embarrassed about how stupid did I look. Anyway, when we come back from the break, we're going to move on and talk about some spooky, scary things. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Jennifer Boozer. I'm here with Sergio Rangel.
Hello.
He's here on sound effects duty and to contribute to this spooky edition, Halloween edition, of Sweet Home Cannabama.
Whoa! No!
So,
whoa!
I got a little carried away earlier, so let me just return to the current events announcements section. We definitely had our first 420 planning meeting last Tuesday. It went great. We had a store full of people. I was very encouraged. Some people from last year, some people that were new. And so we're off to a great start. We're kind of dividing and conquering. Since we're trying to pull off something even bigger and better. But if you are interested in participating in the 2023 420 Bienville Square as either a corporate sponsor, we have packages ranging from $1,000 to $10,000. And believe me, even on the $10,000 package, you're going to more than get your money's worth. But we're looking for sponsors. We're looking for vendors. If you have a small business, if you make jewelry or soap, or you are a fashion designer, or you have a podcast, or you are an artist, if you sell shoes, I don't care. You know, if you'd like to look
at the trees while you're like tripping or having a smoking good time.
If you work for a smoke shop or you own a smoke shop and you guys sell hookahs and glass and pipes and trays and grinders, the things that we don't sell at Cannabama but will definitely be a high ticket value item at such an event. You know, we need that. I think the business that came with all the pipes and glass last year went out of business.
Yes.
Not long after 420, in fact. So we're going to definitely need some of that. If you want to come and be a volunteer, we've got everything from directing traffic to helping out with the food vendors to supervising the kids' activities to,
manage the stage.
Yeah, I mean, bringing food and drinks back and forth to the staff.
Yeah.
You know, making sure that people aren't throwing trash on the ground. Everything you can think of. We need an army of volunteers. And that will come with certain perks like free entry, free T-shirt, some swag, things like that. And then, of course, you'll get up close and personal for the whole day and all the events leading up to that. And we are going to have an audition, like an open mic type audition, where we'll set up an event in January once the holidays are over with. It'll be open to the public, you know, a little $10 ticket. And we'll have it at one of the local venues here in downtown. And anybody who would like to participate as a musical act during 420, we'll be able to come and audition, and then we're going to have a little committee to vote. And so if you or someone you know plays in a band or is an artist and would like to be involved, let us know. For a sponsor and vendor packet or information about auditions, any other issue that you could possibly think of that you, your business, or someone you know might be able to contribute or would like to participate in, you can email us at 420bienvillesquare@gmail.com, 420bienvillesquare@gmail.com. You can also email me personally, jennifer@cannabama.com, CANNABAMA. .com. Not Canna Banana. I will hang up on you. So anyway, that's what's going on right now. In the month of November, of course, we always focus on veterans issues. We don't want to just celebrate Veterans Day. We want to celebrate Veterans Month. We always want to give special attention to the issues that come with being a veteran of any of the armed forces, especially having gone to war. We want to talk about traumatic brain injuries. We want to talk about addiction, homelessness, PTSD, all the terrible catastrophic injuries that our armed forces are coming home with and trying to sort of reintegrate into civilian life, and the challenges that come from that, and how cannabis is directly related to those things and how it can help. So we've got some great veterans lined up to come on the show in different capacities, starting with Charlie Wyckoff. Next Monday, he'll be in the night before the election to talk about the Constitution, to talk about his work with veterans and especially homeless veterans in his capacity as a pastor and in law enforcement. And then we're going to have another guest from the state director for Georgia for the National Industrial Hemp Coalition, James Meisner. I always screw up his name. He is a veteran, and he has an event coming up to support vets and cannabis awareness. So that's just a couple things to look forward to. So, Sergio, tonight for our spooky Halloween edition of Sweet Home Cannabama, we want to talk about the horrifying, terrifying, horrible tragedies like Reefer Madness.
Oh, the humanity!
The Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. Henry Anslinger, the DuPont brother. We're going to talk about some craziness.
And this could be, we're not going to do a two-parter, but I mean, this could definitely be a
It involves the word debauchery. It's one of my favorite words. So anyway, let's get it going. Let's talk a little bit about Reefer Madness. Let's kick it off. Serge, you go first.
Okay, well, really honestly, this I just want to talk about a little bit of the history of Reefer Madness, which isn't just a wonderful movement that took place in the 1930s. Obviously, it was fantastic.
No, Reefer Madness is alive and well.
It was also a propaganda film that was created by a man named Louis J. Gasna. And he didn't have any funding from the U.S. government, as that's what the story goes. But he actually got funding from a church group that was called Tell Your Children, which was like a secondary name to the actual film of Reefer Madness. So it was either Reefer Madness or Tell Your Children, and it was an educational film against cannabis use. And was designed to elaborate on the moral ills of using cannabis and why, as was asserted by the film, it was causing society to implode.
Implode's a strong word.
That's a very strong word, considering of all the stuff that was going on as far as like experimenting, drinking,
right.
Tuskegee experiments were going on at that time, and so there's a lot of things that were happening at the time. It's like, but cannabis is the worst thing you can do. And, you know, it's for me, conspiracy-wise, it's obviously something to brush everything else under the table so you can be fearful of one thing that you don't really understand, which we're going to be getting into because there's a lot of interesting things that men of seemingly great power have said in reference against cannabis, which is very interesting.
Let's tell us what actually the movie is about. Reefer Madness, what is it about?
Okay, so it took place in a high school where unsuspecting students were lured into using and abusing cannabis. And they drew a direct connection between cannabis use and many antisocial activities such as attempted rape, suicide, manslaughter, and declining mental health. Cannabis was also, as they've described, responsible for altering young minds and sending them into the proverbial abyss. So, I mean, they did a lot
to...
That's
so dramatic.
Yeah, I mean, dude, even the... I mean, you saw the movie poster. It's kind of creepy. Like, honestly, I would have thought... Like, it's like the...
That's the whole point, though.
Yeah, like Boris Karloff's Frankenstein.
They want people to recoil from the photos on the poster, and they want, you know...
But then it's funny because...
Attempted rape, suicide, manslaughter, and declining mental health? I mean, come on.
Which is what we found out is actually the opposite. Or as we learn more about...
But they were really going for broke.
Yeah.
They weren't just saying, you know, like now they say, oh, stoners are losers. You know, people who smoke weed can't keep a job. This is attempted rape, suicide, manslaughter, and declining mental health. I mean, they were really making it up.
I mean, it's really hard to, like, kind of read it in a seriousness, but, like, this was a very serious issue back in the day when it came to the fact that,
well,
like,
and let's recall what else was happening in this time. Up to this point, 90% of American pharmacopoeia, which is just a fancy word for medicine, man-made medicine, was cannabis-based.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it cannabis, its proper name.
And they that was based off of like the 1906 law that they had passed, stating that everything had to be named and properly labeled.
Right.
Like, and then after 1932, they had a huge deportation of immigrants that lived here as citizens and as non-citizens right before all this stuff happened as well. So,
right. And therein lies the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937.
Which we'll get into.
Which is right after the release of Reefer Madness.
Mm.
Reefer Madness was like a precursor to the Marijuana Tax Act because it was preparing... They were brainwashing you ahead of time. When this Marijuana Tax Act, when they decided to call it marijuana.
With an H.
And with the purpose of scaring white people against Mexican people that were coming over after the Mexican Revolution. And they were bringing their ganja, their reefer. They're wacky tobacco, you know, and they were demonizing the American government or certain people in the American government or influential to the American government in major American corporations.
Industry.
Were trying to create fear where none existed.
Mm-hmm.
And create division where there was no need for any.
And really no accountability or responsibility to actually how they were.
I mean, does anybody sense a pattern here?
Yeah.
Whoa. Creating division?
Ooh.
Here's an illusion. Pay attention. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. We'll be right back after the break for more Spooky Reefer Madness.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back to the special Halloween edition of Sweet Home Cannabama. I'm here with Sergio Rangel, my lovely host, co-host.
Oh, you just called me lovely. Oh my goodness.
And I called you host.
I'm blushing on Halloween. Yes.
So we were talking about Reefer Madness. And which is directly correlates with the Marijuana Tax Act. And I know y'all have heard me talk about this many, many times, but overview, 1937, they coined the phrase marijuana because cannabis.
With an H.
Cannabis is what it's, you know, that's its Latin name, its medical name, scientific name, whatever. And it was 90% of American medicine. And so the American Medical Association didn't know what marijuana was any more than the average citizen because it was a made-up term that was a racial slur, and it's the whole point was to make white people afraid of brown people. And basically, it was one of the number one crops in the world, and with this tax act, they raised the taxes on this item so much that farmers could no longer afford to grow it because they could not sell it for enough money to cover their expenses, much less make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've gone over the space of a couple hundred years from, you know, you're required to grow it and you could pay your taxes with it to
and
marijuana.
Some important documents were written with it.
Yeah, taxation to the extreme that it basically kills the crop.
Yeah.
And then combined with reefer madness starts this wave of disinformation. And so we got to go back to the main players here.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is Henry Anslinger. Let's talk about Henry Anslinger.
So as far as I was just looking on, I actually took from an article that I had read on timeline.com by Laura Smith. And the headline, which I was like, dang, well, I wonder what this is going to be about.
Right.
But it says, how racist hate monger masterminded the war on drugs. And the tagline is, Harry Anslinger conflated drug use, race, and music to criminalize non-whiteness and create a prison industrial complex.
That's a big statement.
It is.
And that's exactly what he did. But create him, it's true, though, when you think about it, created the prison industrial complex.
And knowingly doing all this, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not even something that he was like, oh, I'm not even sure if this is happening. No,
oops,
this is...
we had no idea this would be the outcome.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah. Per this article, I'm just going to read you a little bit of an excerpt. Y'all check it out if y'all get a chance to.
This gives you a good idea into what a psycho Harry Anslinger was.
So, in 1931... Henry Smith Williams walked into Harry Anslinger's Washington, D.C. office to plead for his brother's life. Anslinger and his agents had locked up every drug user they could find, including Williams' brother, Edgar Williams. And Williams was a doctor who had written extensively on the need for humane treatment of addicts. And he had spoken vehemently against Anslinger's brutal attacks, but confronted by the man himself, his slicked back black hair with the falcon-like visage, a thick neck, and an imposing frame. Williams was suddenly deflated, and he half-heartedly made a few points about his brother not deserving such treatment. Then he left. And after he was out the door, Anslinger mocked him, called him hysterical, and said, "Doctors," he said knowingly, "cannot treat addicts even if they wish to." And he called instead for tough judges not afraid to throw killer pushers into prison and throw away the key.
So, yeah, this guy, he didn't care who he hurt.
Mm.
I think he was brought in sort of like the muscle.
Yeah.
He went in to break the kneecaps and get everybody in line.
I'm going to bronze your kneecaps, send them to your kids for Christmas.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what he said. I mean, these three guys, or it's multiple guys, one's some brothers. I don't know how many brothers there were. I'm assuming at least two. But these guys shaped the entire future of the world
and this
affects the whole world.
And what's so crazy is that, like back then and like now, refusing to listen to the doctors that are pleading the cases with facts.
Right. They're trying to end run around people.
Yeah.
That's a similar way they're trying to sneak a D8 ban into a bill about vape products.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what does that have to do
with
anything?
You're not even talking about the same thing at that point.
No. Or those Tatiana pills that are like synthetic opium. And then you throw D8 into a ban bill once that's been voted for unanimously?
Mm-hmm.
That's not how this works.
Yeah, and especially because you're not informing the people of the changes or that this
right.
has nothing
or
to
giving
do with...
them a chance to speak their mind.
Yeah.
If it's something that's going to be banned in this state or made legal in this state, every citizen in Alabama should be given the opportunity to speak for themselves. Forget the representatives. The people of Alabama should be able to say, and if that the poll that I shared on Facebook, that what was it, 79%? This was a poll done by some company and the Alabama Medical Cannabis Commission that they had set up, and they polled a bunch of likely voters. It was like 79% of likely voters in Alabama are pro medical marijuana.
Mm.
Only 9% were against it. So then, you know, that what's 79 plus 9 is what? 88. I can add. I'm telling y'all I'm tired. I'm going 743.
That was simple math for me.
But if 88%, you know, what are the other 12% say? Were they undecided?
Well, I mean, even just 79% is insane just to say, like,
right,
if
that
that's the case.
People aren't bothered by
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
If that's true, if that's even remotely true.
Yeah.
Even if it was closer to 50%.
It's still,
we're not talking about legalizing something only 10% of the population wants.
But even only 9% would have been against it, which means that there's still 91% of people that are pretty much kind of still okay with it.
That are because, okay with it or not opposed to it.
Yeah, because they don't either use
and
it or they know somebody that does.
And then there's a margin
of
error
yeah.
there, you know? There's always that plus or minus.
But as we get into the rest of it, maybe things will start to, you know, build more of the conspiracy. Who knows?
Right. So, okay, the DuPont brothers.
Mm.
All right. So in order to eliminate drug use, the government made all addictive substances illegal. Okay? The twist, it was believed that the DuPont family played a role in passing the law. This is DuPont Chemical, people. This family and this company is alive and well.
Started with gunpowder.
Yep. So in a Forbes report, the DuPont family is 15th on the Forbes list of 2016's richest families. Their net worth is $14.3 billion.
At the time of the report.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's been, what, 5-6 years ago?
Mm.
The family's fortune is estimated to be shared between 3,500 family members and dates back more than 200 years ago. Families of wealthy and powerful businessmen and newspapermen were threatened by the growing use of cannabis, especially the DuPont family, who originally made their fortune from gunpowder and were now developing synthetic fabrics and had to compete against hemp. They also created, during all this segue into the next guy on the list, they also came up with a cheap way to take trees and make paper out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to figure out a chemical process that would allow the tree fiber to be turned into paper as opposed to hemp fiber. Jack Herrera wrote a book. The Emperor Wears No Clothes, and it details the conspiracy, believing it was a powerful group of American industrialists, including the DuPont family, who wanted to demonize the hemp industry in the 1930s. I think that that's fairly obvious that he was right.
And it's a really good strain. Jack Herrera is a good
Jack
strain.
Jack Herrera, well, yes.
Yeah.
We smoke it in effigy.
CBD and Delta 8, though.
Right, of course. And so that kind of gives us a segue into our... He always sticks out to me as, like, the henchman, him and Harry Anslinger. But him, this was a manipulative guy. But I'm talking about William Randolph Hearst.
Mm.
Okay?
It's going to be a two-part segment with this man.
Yes. Yeah, so this is a quote from William Randolph Hearst. Users of marijuana become stimulated as they inhale the drug and are likely to do anything. Most crimes of violence in this section, especially in country districts, are laid to users of that drug. I mean, let's just sit with that for a minute.
You know, I find it completely fascinating that, like, this is all just based on either watching hearsay or not even putting together the complete story of, like, everything that he's accusing. This.
Well, in some of these things, including the posters that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
They're so outlandish. Mm-hmm. It's like they're not even trying to sound feasible.
Well, and especially the fact that they all say the same things. Like, the pictures are different, but they all
right.
say
they all
relatively
have
the same
message, right?
Yeah.
With different graphics and you know, different order of words, like debauchery. That's my favorite. So William Randolph Hearst built the success of his media empire. Now, this guy owned, I'm just going to break this down, he owned most of the major newspaper syndicates in the country. So he had a huge media empire, and he also owned tens of thousands of acres of forest. trees. Now remember,
if you didn't know that trees make forests.
I almost crushed you. That's how tired I am. I almost popped off real hard. Ooh, thank you, Jesus. It was Finnegan scary in here for real, for real.
And there would have been a
teeth
real
gonna
madness.
Start flying across the room. Yeah. I'm too tired. Anyway, so he owned all these trees. And guess what his buddies, the DuPont brothers, did? Made paper out of trees.
Mm.
When we come back, we'll finish with William Randolph Hearst and yellow journalism. We're going to tell you what that means after the break.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Canabama. Now with all the information you want about CBD, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm still trying not to curse out Sergio. I did tell him on the break what I was going to say.
I threw it for a loop for a second.
Yeah, I short-circuited for a minute there. Yeah, you could see the glitch in my face. Okay, so William Randolph Hearst, he built the success of his media empire using a style of journalism called yellow journalism. The dictionary defines that as journalism that is based upon sensationalism and crude exaggeration. He also took a run at politics. He was elected 2 times as a Democrat, go figure, to the U.S. House of Representatives. An unsuccessful run for president in 1904.
Thank
unsuccessful
you.
Bids for mayor of New York City in 1905 and 1909. And lost to Charles Evans Hughes in the run for governor of New York in 1906. He just pick an office, any office.
Yeah.
That's how you know
pick
you've
a stage,
got money.
Any stage, you shall have it.
That's how you know you have expendable income.
Yeah.
So William Hearst was not a friend to minorities or cannabis users. This man hated cannabis so much that he authored the iconic Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. So William Randolph Hearst wrote this ridiculousness where they made up a racial slur and hid it from the American Medical Association and used it to make white people scared of brown people. That's who this man was. And manipulated the entire media by using his own trees and chemical process. I mean, who knows in the beginning what exposure to those chemicals in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Just touching it with your hands, the way the ink comes off, and who knows what people were exposed to.
Well, I mean, you know, like that whole thing where printed paper, you could just sniff it and get high at
yeah,
a specific point.
Yeah, yeah. So the term yellow journalism, which means, you know, sensationalism and crude exaggeration, it actually stems from this DuPont chemical process. Not long at all, the newspapers made out of tree paper with DuPont's process would start to get brittle and curl up on the edges and turn yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So all these sensational, you know, National Enquirer-esque headlines were turning yellow and becoming brittle, and that's where the term yellow journalism comes from. And it became like an official thing in the dictionary.
So blame WRH for not being able to preserve your papers because he wanted to use a chemical process.
Yeah, so the Marijuana Tax Act of 37 that he authored was later replaced by the Controlled Substances Act of 1970. Thank you, Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
That has plagued all of us ever since. And that is also the year that, related or not, medicine went from being nonprofit to for-profit.
And I think that was actually 2 years before the CDC came into play and was still the same company that was doing the Tuskegee experiments.
Mm.
So, which is still yeah. fascinating.
Right. So medicine went from nonprofit to for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
Big Pharma was just coming down the pipeline hard, and marijuana was being put on the list with heroin and LSD.
And CIA
all
was
at the same time. And then you have the CIA selling assault rifles to the Contras for cocaine,
mm-hmm.
which they were pumping into the American economy and teaching street dealers in places like L.A. how to cook it into crack. And that became the war on drugs, which became a way to stigmatize and imprison and oppress an entire people group for generations.
Which is also fascinating, too, because at the same time, they're also doing these quote-unquote mind control experiments mm-hmm. with LSD and acid and trying to figure out ways that they can manipulate people to be susceptible or more susceptible to thought, you know, to change whatever you want to do, you know.
I think they figured out how to do it with sugar somehow, because sugar is so prolific in all of our food, even foods that don't taste sweet,
mm-hmm.
because it's 8 times more addictive than cocaine and lights up both sides of the brain. And
that's really interesting.
It's not something people consider a drug.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about you guys. I can quit Oxy, and I'm talking 60 milligrams of Oxy every 3 hours for 5 days straight. I can quit that cold turkey. I cannot quit sugar.
Yeah,
I struggle. I'm super.
I've noticed more and more how I've craved it whenever I don't have it, and that's why I try to drink more water. But man, like when I taste like Dr. Pepper or like a soda, I'm like,
it's like I feel like a crackhead. I do.
Like it's really interesting.
I like make noises and stuff. Like it's so good the way it burns. If you drink Dr. Pepper, you know what I'm saying.
Oh, babe, and it hurts so good.
Exactly. Sometimes love don't feel like it should.
Because it hurts so good.
So here's some famous quotes. By William Randolph Hearst, marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
Oh, man.
I have nothing to say. You smoke a joint, and you're likely to kill your brother.
So Cain and Abel
must have
been token up.
But I don't have brothers,
so
I'm cool. I sometimes have wanted to kill my sisters without any drug enhancement.
But since you're not a brother,
that's right.
He wouldn't have done it.
Reefer makes darkies think they're as good as white men. That turns my stomach.
And that's
someone who was an elected official who was a power broker in this country.
And he was trying to get into more offices.
Right. Like, this is a guy who wanted to be the mayor of New York and the president. And then I do not think there is such a thing as not being able to cure an addict. Marijuana addicts must go to a federal narcotic farm. What the heck is that? What's a federal narcotic farm?
I think that's what turns into the prisons. Like that's what it ended up becoming from one thing to another. Like, oh yeah, let's initially start to seem like we're helping out the people. Oh wait, we can get money from this. Oh wait, we can tax people more for this. Oh wait, here's a way that we can make money and keep people incarcerated.
So not only did we have reefer madness and yellow journalism, there were propaganda posters that were put up all over the place in big and small towns. There were commercials. There were, you know, stories like in the newspaper. And then, of course, the word of mouth becomes rampant because back then they didn't have TVs. You know, like you got all your news from the newspaper. And whenever, I don't know when radio started. I know people used to listen to everything
on
the radio.
Late 1920s, early 1930s, because FDR did his fire sale speeches and stuff over the radio during the 1930s.
Yeah.
And then they started hearing more about...
I think I remember that radio was a thing during World War One.
Yeah, because...
The 19-teens.
Because Superman and everything, they definitely had the Superman radio show and all of that. And
yeah, okay. So anyway, these propaganda posters, are absolutely, I don't know if you've ever seen one, they're absolutely ridiculous, and...
This is one, just a quote from a propaganda poster. A vicious racket with its arms around your children.
Right. Horror, shame, despair. Marijuana, weed with roots in hell. Not recommended for children. Smoke that gets in youth's eyes. Weird orgies, wild parties, unleashed passions, misery. And then there's a hand with claws, which looks like it's holding like 6 cigarettes. And each of them has a word. Lust, crime, sorrow, hate, shame, despair.
As we said before.
Not recommended for children.
As we said before, that would make for a good party. And we should have that. And we'll name all the joints that.
Right. And then, you know. The Smoke of Hell, Sin, Degradation, Vice, Insanity, Debauchery,
Drug
Devil's
Crazed
Harvest.
Abandon.
Yeah, Drug Crazed Abandon is my favorite. And I love this one, says, See Youthful Marijuana Victims, What Actually Happens. That is a 45-year-old couple in that picture. That's the mom and dad of the debaucherous children.
Did you see the stuff I took off our kid Jimmy this morning?
Yeah.
It's crazy what they're doing these days. Let's toke up, Wanda.
Here's one. Women cry for it. Men will die for it. Adults only. Anyway, we don't have to. I mean, you guys know how ridiculous this is.
It does sound.
This honestly, it sounds funny now, and we're making fun of it a little. But this struck fear in the hearts of the average American. And it has cost us countless lives.
Billions of dollars.
Deaths that were unnecessary. Quality of life that was garbage. And people dying way too soon from things that were perfectly treatable. An entire generation or two of people on multiple prescriptions starting in, preschool? Sometimes before that. You know, and we're fatter and sicker and dumber than ever, and yet we have more access to more information right in our pockets, more technological, medical advances, more woke everything, you know. It's funny because there seems to be lots of individual subject experts and nobody knows anything about anything anymore, and no one wants to listen to anybody on any point of view that differs from their opinion, which could be wrong.
Well, I mean, you know, it comes back to, again, the a lot of us, the woke generation is very traumatized in the sense that discovering trauma and then saying, hey, let me try to work with it, but not actually handle and figure out the basis of all of this.
Like, right. But unfortunately, we're proving that even 100 years ago, most of what comes from the government is crap and it has a purpose. And I'll leave you on that note to scare you half to death. Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween.
From Sweet Home, Canabama, we'll see you guys next week. Good night.